Okay, I'll call this meeting of the Blaine City Council to order Monday, June 10th, 6 p.m. And would you please join us for a moment of silence, please? Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Jean Arnett?
Here.
Eric Davidson?
Here.
Charlie Hawkins?
Here.
Steve Morrison?
Here.
Bonnie Anu?
Here.
Alicia Rule?
Here.
And Mary Lou Stewart?
Here.
Okay, do we have anybody signed up to speak? Andrew, could you check the clipboard back there or? Okay.
Some of the people are already on the agenda.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, the only one on here who is not going to be later on in the meeting, I think, is Jody Green. Jody, would you like to address council?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Do you want my address or anything? My name is Jody Green, and I'm a resident who walks, jogs, and socializes in downtown Blaine often, almost daily. I have some concerns about adding an apartment complex in the downtown district, and I just wanted to address that if it comes up later. We have a few Main Street roads, and this will cause congestion entering and exiting the city. The police department is not properly staffed. My husband is a sergeant that works for Blaine Police Department. Just recently, he was working alone and had to enter a house after calling for backup, which was the sheriff's department. Again, he was working without another Blaine police officer on duty. He was put into a position of great danger during this event. Details cannot be discussed because it's still an ongoing investigation. He called out code 2, which means he needs immediate assistance, and his radio didn't work. This could have been fatal. He came home to change out of his blood-soaked uniform, and then he returned to the road. I will continue to advocate for the police department because it seems that no one is listening. The city did not approve the hiring of any more officers this year. I'm kind of shocked and disappointed. Currently, we do not have enough police officers to protect the citizens of Blaine properly without continually putting their lives in danger as well. This was outlined in the lead maps. We're still down 2 police officers that I know of. What about access for the fire department in the event of an emergency? Downtown is wonderfully busy already, but with a large apartment complex, I can see the difficulty the fire department and EMS would have maneuvering their large vehicles, emergency vehicles in the area without shutting down roads and part of the city. This also reduces their response time. The skate park is conveniently placed in the best location possible. We want the youth to hang out downtown and be a part of this community, the center of this community. Let's not move them further from town, away from the most convenient location for them, tucked behind our local library, where many of our events for youth take place. Also, there is a feeling of safety behind the police department. Let's focus on the younger generations and prioritize what would be best for them. Let's take the relocation of the skate park off your to-do list. My entire point is that we don't have the infrastructure to put a multifamily apartment building in the downtown district. Let's add shops, restaurants with apartments above them, and a recreational facility instead. We have enough fields behind Cost Cutter within walking distance to the downtown district that would be ideal for an apartment complex. Let's look at the zoning. Affordable housing is a dire need in Blaine. Many of our families cannot afford a home here and need an apartment. We need low-income housing. When you address this in the future, please keep these things in mind. The city needs to look at other places for apartment complex, make sure there is enough space for emergency vehicles, not congest the downtown district, hire enough officers to keep our first responders and citizens safe, and prioritize our youth. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Okay, and so Christina and Joey, you'll do together your presentation. But not yet, though. I'm sorry. I just was reiterating that it will come a little bit later. We have a special slot reserved for you. So before then, we'll have the fire chief's report. Chief Rostoff.
Good evening, council members. I've handed out the responder newsletter, and it has some more detailed information for you, but I wanted to touch on four items that are kind of going on at the moment in a little bit more detail and talk about them specifically to you. The first one is that with the new creation of the dedicated fire marshal position, North Whatcom Fire and Rescue is now providing all fire plan review, system plan review, and field inspections for the city of Blaine. So the fire department is now doing that work for all of the review stuff, and it's not being handled by any outside consultant or company. It's being done by the firefighters and the people that would be responding to those emergencies and have a vested interest in that. So thank you for having us involved in this process. I think we're able to provide a great service to the city of Blaine because of that. Second item that's on page 2 in the responder newsletter is that we have two volunteer firefighters gone through the full EMT Academy, and they've just graduated from the EMT Academy, so they're now emergency medical technician trained, and they're currently working to receive their national certification to be able to provide that service. So it's exciting for us to have some volunteers who've gone through the process, received that training, and are moving on to the certification level, which should happen very soon. Third item is I really wanted to thank you and appreciate everybody who showed up for Chief Hollander's retirement. We had a prominent speaker, obviously, at the event, and it was really well attended. We had over 100 people were there, we had visitors from Canada and people from other fire departments and family and community that were there to really celebrate his life and also celebrate his involvement in the community and the fire service. So much of the fire department, both for the city of Blaine beforehand and Fire District 21, has all been driven by, and we've all experienced the wonderful interaction from Chief Hollander, and I appreciate everybody's involvement in that event. It was a wonderful event. The last item I wanted to talk about was the ribbon ceremony. So we had a fallen firefighter memorial for John Swabity. He died in June 4th of 2018, a line of duty death for North Whatcom. Was directly attributed to cancer related to the job of firefighting here in the area. What is significant recently in the news on it is that last weekend, a week ago Friday, we began the firefighter memorial ceremony for that. So a ribbon was delivered to the fire department. It moved from station to station here, ended up at the headquarters station, and then went down last Friday by motorcycle escort down to Olympia, where there was a statewide presentation, and then it's moving on to the East Coast for the National Firefighter Memorial Ceremony. And so I wanted to make you aware of that, and it was very well attended. And I ended up, just as a side note, being in a unique position to be on the freeway headed home for the weekend and following that procession of lots of motorcycles, IAFF members carrying the ribbon down to Olympia. And it was a really interesting and exciting procession of motorcycles down the freeway, and really gave him the honor that he deserved for that. So I want to thank you for the opportunity. And does anybody have any questions that I can help with?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have two presentations, and the first one is going to be From Susan Marks of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission on Sexual and Domestic Violence. Hello, Susan.
Hello, good evening. I see a lot of new faces, I think, from the last times I've been here. So I'm Susan Marks, and I'm the director of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission on Sexual and Domestic Violence. And before I get going, I just want to acknowledge that what I'm going to be talking about for the next bit and answering your questions about if you have any is the impact of domestic and sexual violence in this county. And so just, you know, it can be a hard topic, and it's something that is important that we all acknowledge is impacting many people in our community, including probably people in this room. So as I enter into that, I just want to acknowledge that this is very personal for many of us, either individually or for people who are in our community who we care a lot about. And I really just want to say thanks for taking this time today and each year to have me come and give an update about what is happening in your community and throughout this county and how we can improve our response to and prevention of domestic and sexual violence. Now, let's see if I can. Okay, so a little bit about the commission, especially for those of you who may be the first time you've heard of us. The commission was formed in 1998 by Whatcom County and the City of Bellingham. It's a joint commission. And in 2006, all of the additional municipalities in Whatcom County passed ordinances of support, so kind of officially making our charge to serve all of the jurisdictions throughout the county. And this year, after we did a lot of research, which I'll talk about in a moment, about how our community is responding to sexual assault, the city and the county expanded our mission to include sexual assault in addition to domestic violence. And our commission, I'm director of the staff of the commission. We have four staff. The commission itself is made up of up to 31 members, and you have a full list of the membership in your packets, but they include leaders in the criminal and civil justice field, leaders from tribes and government agencies, and leaders from other sectors that are often serving people who are victims, children who are in homes where there's domestic violence, and people who are perpetrating domestic and sexual violence. You can, like I said, see the full list of people who are on the commission in your packets. And the idea is with all of these people who are in leadership positions is that they are able to actually affect change within their agencies and able to provide our staff with guidance on what projects they want us to carry out on their behalf. Let's see. So our mission is to inspire and coordinate our community's efforts to address sexual and domestic violence, and we do that by working with systems and community agencies and professionals who are, again, connecting with victims, offenders, and children. And we do that by connecting institutions, stakeholders, and communities, increasing understanding and effectiveness of responses, transforming the way our systems are responding, especially to survivors and their children, and throughout all of it, again, fostering safety and justice and well-being for survivors and our communities. It's like a delay. It's like when you talk to someone about, like in the other side of the world or something. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about a few of our projects, and that's really the best way to understand the work that we're doing and also to understand, again, what is happening related to sexual and domestic violence. And when I talk about projects, I like to start by centering the work we're doing in the voices of people who are most impacted, either by survivors or professionals who we're working with in this field. So one of our projects, we recently did an audit of our county's criminal legal response to sexual assault. And as part of that, we interviewed a number and did focus groups with about, I think we heard from 37 survivors of sexual assault in Whatcom County who experienced sexual assault and reported sexual assault in our county within the last 5 years. And these were some of the things they told us about their experiences with reporting. The hospital, Bellingham Police Department, Sheriff's Office were the agencies we audited, Whatcom County Prosecutor's Office, and Domestic Violence Sexual Assault Services. So what they said is, if nothing else were to change, it is that you need to tell the victim what is going on. There are so many missed opportunities by many people in power to even acknowledge harm done, to offer condolences. And sometimes the way the agencies respond or don't respond to you ends up actually being worse of an experience than the incident. So again, we heard sentiments like this from, and we heard some people also positive experiences. I will put that out there as well. We heard a lot of sentiments like this from the survivors that we interviewed as part of this audit. And Blaine Police Department, you may have noticed, was not on the list of was not on the list of the agencies that we specifically audited and looked at their response. However, we normally work with the largest police departments because they're the ones who can contribute staff. This is a very long, time-intensive process. And also, a lot of the findings related to them likely would be related to other law enforcement agencies in our county. And then the other three agencies, the hospital, domestic violence, sexual assault services, and the prosecutor's office, do serve, if someone experienced sexual assault in Blaine, those are the agencies that would serve them. All felonies, I mean, sexual assault is a felony, so all goes to our felony county prosecutor's office. We have one hospital that does forensic exams, and Domestic and Sexual Assault Services is the service agency. So our team, over a period of 18 months, collected a lot of data, including hearing from survivors. We also did a number of focus groups and interviews with professional stakeholders, law enforcement, prosecutors, nurses, advocates, counselors. We mapped out the responses of systems. So if you make a report, what does that look like and what happens next? We did text analysis of policies and procedures, police reports and prosecution files. And we observed a local trial, emergency department processes, and multidisciplinary team meetings. And as I said, this was all led by a team that included people who work in each of these systems. So those people are helping us to analyze the findings and figure out what is actually happening, what could actually be improved. We had a number of findings, and you have these laid out, again, in your packets laid out for you. And I will read those for you. So we had two themes, which are really broad societal themes that are impacting our entire cultural response throughout this country, and probably many other countries throughout this world, and how we're understanding sexual assault, and they also impact the way our local communities respond. We're not immune from these. And then we had a number of strengths and gaps. So our themes were the ways our community institutions understand and respond to reports of sexual assault are influenced by widespread societal myths and misconceptions about sexual assault, and implicit bias and oppression lead to inequitable outcomes in the ways our community institutions serve and partner with marginalized communities, particularly Native communities. And then the strengths, there wasn't room on the slide, so I'm just going to read the strengths separately. One is that our agency is proactively committed to the intensive audit process to examine our limitations and improve our system's responses in order to seek justice for survivors, accountability for offenders, and increase community safety. Like I said, it was extremely time intensive, so that is an extremely important strength that our community is willing to do this kind of work. Our agencies have functioning commitments to and frameworks for multidisciplinary collaboration in response to sexual assault cases. And then our other strength that we found is the expertise and effort of individual practitioners in sexual assault dynamics and trauma-informed care contributes to survivors' experience of being believed and their sense of justice, dignity, and safety. So we find a number of individuals within systems that are doing an amazing job, and that we want to do is put in safe policy and practice that would raise everyone's experience when they're reporting to that level. These gaps we identified then were also identified across systems. So we found that across systems, survivors experienced significant delays after reporting. They also, during those long times of waiting, and it went from waiting extremely long times to the emergency department from showing up to be able to get a forensic exam, to also waiting from the time they reported until the time there was a resolution of their case at the prosecutor's office. They often experienced a lack of follow-up and communication during that time, so oftentimes months or years without knowing what was happening with their case. There's an over-focus on survivor credibility to the detriment of more focus on suspect behavior and credibility. We found a lack of criminal accountability for reported sexual assault offenders, which may enable serial offenders. We actually, in looking at case files, saw a number of people's names come up multiple times for having been reported. And then just across system, there's a lack of deep expertise in sexual assault dynamics, trauma-informed care, and survivor engagement. That again, some individual practitioners have and that have not been necessarily trained on throughout systems. So the fun part about collecting data is we get to find out where could we do better, and then we get to implement change. And so we have a number of recommendations in place. There's like 130 recommendations or something for all of those agencies, and they include things like putting in place policy and protocol, providing professional training. We have grant funding to do some of these things. Like, we're gonna bring in some trainers for law enforcement prosecutors and nurses to improve our multidisciplinary response so that we were communicating about cases. And there are a lack of resources. I heard someone who spoke before me mention a lack of maybe an increased need for law enforcement at Blaine. That is definitely something we see at the other law enforcement agencies, as detectives and prosecutors do not have, their caseloads are too high for them to do the type of work that's needed on these kinds of cases. So working with all of our local agencies to develop action plans and timelines for implementing their changes, we're starting a sexual assault response team, which is how we'll consult differently on cases for sexual assault, and we're providing a number of trainings, as I mentioned. The next, I'm going to touch briefly on two other projects that we're working on. I will say that one is looking back after a really traumatic experience has happened to someone and how we could improve that response. These two are a little bit more looking forward and preventative, so they're a little more hopeful to talk about and think about lasting behavior change. So we have a project which we're working with three Whatcom County school districts on prevention and response in the districts, and those districts are Blaine, Ferndale, Mount Baker school districts, and they are doing K-12, developing policy, doing staff training, doing prevention in schools with youth, providing services, counseling, and advocacy services on site at the schools. So when we started this project 3 years ago, we went and asked people in our community, people in the school communities, what do you think we need to be working on? And one thing we heard from our local high school staff, this is actually someone here in Blaine, said, with the girl who was raped, there was a lot of victim blaming and gossip from the peer community. It wasn't anything with the perpetrator, it was her friends taking sides. We heard from a domestic violence survivor, I think we need to develop tools and skills for bystanders. We heard from a youth that I think for today's youth, a lot of information is found online and a lot of that is inaccurate. And for young queer people, it's really hard to navigate that. So as I said, we've been working with the Blaine School District for several years. We actually had kind of our last meeting, which we're implementing a lot of these changes today. Our grant ends in September, and it's really exciting, a lot of the things we've accomplished. And one of the things was we had a countywide youth summit in early March focused on consent. And one of the things we talked about in Blaine today, the Blaine High School actually had the highest number of students attending of any high school, actually of any school district in the county. So even more than Bellingham's four high schools, Blaine School District sent more youth. They sent 36 youth and 3 adult mentors to this consent event. And that was out of a total of 145 students and 24 adult mentors and 8 different high schools. And the groups included sports teams, prevention clubs, and queer straight alliances. Of youth who attended, 74% identified as female, 18% as male, and 8% as non-binary. And 44% of the students identified as LGBTQ+, which is important. That was one of the focuses of our grant, is really to work out to youth who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, because oftentimes resources can feel further away for those students. Of the youth who attended, we did evaluations, 57% responded. I would say these numbers, I think, I never trust a 99%, but what I think they show is that an overwhelming number of the youth felt like they learned some of these things. So most youth said they learned how to define consent, how to recognize consent. They learned about new resources and they felt energized to take action. So in Blaine High School, students, since this event in March, students hosted 2 assemblies on consent before prom and kind of postered their school with information about consent and healthy relationships again through prom. And Blaine actually High School has a really particularly active student youth group, which we've been working with and doing a lot of these healthy relationship and consent campaigns on campus and changing school climate around relationships and consent, which is really exciting. They're actually the most active also youth group in our county, which is really fun to work with them. And the other project we're working on is related to restorative justice and domestic violence and sexual assault. And again, I'll start with some quotes why we would be doing this from survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. I just want him to acknowledge what he did, to say he's sorry, he understands that it was wrong. I just didn't want him to do it to someone else. And I know that it was messed up and he'd own up to that, but I also didn't want him to go to jail. So we've been hearing from a number of people about not everyone is reporting to law enforcement, not everyone chooses to go that route, but a lot of people want to be able to express, a lot of survivors want to express to the person who harmed them what that impact was on them, on their family, on their community. And they really want to have some sort of response for accountability from that person. So restorative justice could possibly be a way to do this. There are communities throughout the country, including ours, that are exploring how restorative justice could be applied to domestic violence and sexual assault, where there could be dialogue and conversation where survivors can express what happened to them, and people who have caused harm, people who are offenders, can take accountability and change their behavior based on that. And so we have launched a learning series throughout the next year where every other month we are learning together about with some other members of our community about how restorative justice could be applied to domestic violence, sexual assault, what that framework is, and developing some shared values for how we would apply that, that framework of restorative justice to domestic violence and sexual assault. And so we're co-hosting this with the Whatcom Dispute Resolution Center. They really bring a lot of expertise on restorative justice and restorative conversations. We really bring expertise on domestic violence and sexual assault dynamics. We had our first learning session in May, just a couple weeks ago, and we asked people who wanted to attend all sessions about their learning series. We have about 50 people from throughout the county attending, including we have a number of people from the Blaine schools participating. Like I said, we had the initial meeting last month, and we're going to resume after the summer in the fall, and are going to be just learning more about how we can have more choices for justice and healing for survivors and create more ways for those who have caused harm to take real accountability for what they've done and change their behavior. Any questions or comments about anything I talk about or any other thing you would like to know about our work or domestic violence and sexual assault in this community?
Thank you for a great presentation and thank you for doing the work. I'm just wondering if you have any information from this evaluation data or just from professional and personal experience as to how we as a small city could work better or work well with you on some of these goals.
I would say I mean, I think there's been a little lull. I know Blaine has gone through some changes in law enforcement leadership. We've always had a strong relationship with the prosecutor in Blaine and the law enforcement agency in Blaine, with both previous chiefs, and hopefully looking forward we'll have with the new chief. I think the main way to be supportive is something that we do experience with all of our agencies is continuing to just, you know, we host trainings. People come to the training. They help us get input about when's a good time for that. Is there a day of the week? Is there a time of year when we can't have it? Having people, when we come forward with recommendations about policy, having them take a serious look at that policy and start to implement those. We've worked in the past on implementing programs with law enforcement, like the lethality assessment program. And so, again, I actually met with the sergeant from Blaine Police Department maybe a month ago. We talked about retraining all of law enforcement. It's been a while since the training, so retraining all of the officers on the lethality assessment program. So I would say what I've always experienced a lot of responsiveness, I think from all of our law enforcement agencies in the county, and the Blaine School District specifically is a really responsive district. So I think, again, just as a community, continuing to support that and give that message. I know when you're short-staffed, you're often trying to decide, are we, like, what kind of training are we doing? What kinds of people do we meet with? What kinds of responses can we improve? And I think just naming that this is a priority for the council and the community is important and helps prioritize that among all the other things that people are deciding about.
Thank you. It seems that there's a lot of data collected on sort of the front end of this, like how police respond, how the hospitals respond. What sort of data has been collected for long term? Just in particular, when offenders are released, how are we speaking to survivors? Are we connecting with them?
That was one of the things we heard. So I guess one thing, I don't have the percentage with me, but it's a very few number of, for sexual assault, there's very few number of prosecutions that happen and people that end up getting convicted or put in jail. For domestic violence, there's a lot more people who end up in jail. Definitely one of the things we heard from survivors is that there are programs they can sign up for where they're supposed to get calls when someone is released, and that sometimes, and there has been a change within the last year or two with that system, so I think it will fix some of the bugs. We had people say, yeah, my offender was released into my community, no one called me, no one let me know, and then I just ran into them, so that is always an ongoing issue. Around planning, I think that's something that people are often looking, especially to their law enforcement agency for, is someone moved in the community that they know has been accused of sexual assault or charged with sexual assault. What are we doing to keep them safe? And so I think those can definitely be a role for community conversation, is how do we let that person know that this is not an act that's acceptable in this community and that we're aware of what our safety needs and plans are.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Susan? Thank you, Susan. Very good report, as usual. Thank you. Okay, next we have a presentation from Christina Winkler and a video by Joey Winkler on the Hands Across the Border that just happened yesterday.
And do we have a disc now? I didn't know I had a disc drive to my... Whatever.
I think it downloaded successfully. Okay.
Can I talk while he's...
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I have to ask.
It's all right.
It was a wonderful event. We did really well with camp.
Pull your mic up a little bit. There we go.
Third time that we've offered the camp, and we have camp managers that we make a big donation to from outside of town, but we've decided that it's just too much for us. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to find a local group who will be our camp managers, so that we organize everything and that we have them stay and that they're local. And then they clean it up.
Yes.
Okay? Because, you know, and then we make a big donation to that group for doing it. Very exciting, very, very happy. He's got some beautiful shots in here. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, we advertise for next year in our goodie bag. This here is, I only have one because we packed 2,000 goodie bags, and so this is like $3 off if you register by January 31st. And so constant marketing, beautiful people, no trash when they go. They are polite. It's inspiring for the park visitors who just wind up there. And as you saw, our stats have increased again, and 90% of the people who come are more than 45 miles away. And they love it. Mm-hmm. And they love Blaine. And with that,
you want to start it?
Go right ahead. I'm kind of tired. I'll let it speak. So, Great, great work by my son. There's some beautiful
yes.
shots. It's not that. The doves, we had a dove release, and I think he was under it, and it went up back over. Where were you when you took that picture?
I was just in front of the Peace Arch.
Yeah, so the doves go up and
we're gonna go off of
very beautiful.
Yeah, Michael, it should be downloaded. Okay. It's in the root folder.
Yeah, it doesn't want to do that.
And some sound?
You have sound on it now.
Oh, yeah. The happy joy. And it's really turning into a, we surveyed when we brought back the event, what do you want? And it was more of a, you know, a different kind of an event where the kids came and had a little bit of fun, but they sat around a lot.
There won't be sound.
There won't be sound? Okay.
Oh,
so basically, what they say we've done is we've taken everything they loved about it and we've made it everything they dreamed it could be. We had a merit badge booth, volunteers from Mill Creek, and a group that came up, and 79 scouts actually got their world citizenship. It's called, what is it? Citizenship in the World Merit Badge at the event.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a special stamp that went on their thing that said, I think, something about that it was earned on the border. I can't mm-hmm. remember. So, but it was a lovely event. We had the lady, her husband was the Zoo Books founder, and she has the sculpture with all the animals on it, and she gave away 1,500 zoo books to anybody who came through, and it was just inspiring and just so fun to see children play there.
Mm-hmm.
None of this. It was just amazing. None of this.
Yeah.
And it's all the face painters are volunteers. But it's to not be an official scouting organization and to attract this kind of an audience really has a lot to do with the goodwill of the people who really did it for many, many years. And we have tremendous respect for that. When we brought it back modern, using the internet and communicating in the ways that the family likes. And they're coming back next year, and I'm sure there'll be more. We have there's fewer Canadians, but that's okay. I mean, they're going to catch on. The more infrastructure the more money we have, the more, you know, everything, there's a traffic plan, there's a lot that goes into it. Oh, and we applied for the Peace Arch to be on a stamp last fall, and that was our theme. And we did a lovely artwork where you may have seen them putting stamps on something. It's going to be finished, and we have to Mod Podge it, and it'll be put in the Peace Arch Cafe. And it's really neat because when we do our art at the event, it kind of symbolizes a little piece of everybody who was there. And I think that the team wants to do that at the 4th of July for people, other people here. So anyway, I'm really tired. And thank you for your time. I wish we had music. The video. I'm really proud of Joey, and when he gets it finished, we'll get it up there where everybody can share it, and he is available to capture moments.
Great.
Whether it's a wedding or whatever. JD Films.
Thank you, Joey and Christina, and thank you for organizing a wonderful event for this town. You deserve a round of applause. Okay, next on the agenda, we have written communications. Andrew, do you want to read what we've got?
Yep, an email dated May 29th 2019 from Suzanne McIntosh regarding her interaction with the Blaine police officer.
Okay.
New email dated June 7th, 2019 from Bill Brett. Regarding the All Aboard Washington Rail meeting. New letter dated June 7th, 2019 from Owen regarding barriers on the sidewalks. Those are all.
Okay, we've got them in our packet. Okay. Next on the consent agenda for approval, we have approval of bills in the amount of $221,158.35 with a wire register of $1,586,248.15 and approval of payroll $602,379.78 and also approval of the May 28th City Council minutes. Would someone like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Second.
A move by Councilor Hawkins, seconded by Councilor Davidson to approve the consent agenda. Any questions? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. We have two action items this evening, the first being consideration of an employment contract for Donnell Tanksley, our incoming police chief.
Mayor, Council, this will be pretty quick. I have a in your packet. We've submitted a employment contract that's fairly standard of management contracts with the city and has some specific adjustments for the police chief responsibilities. The contract, I did want to point out on page 4 of 8, there's a section on the vehicle allowance. I do want to make some technical changes there. It references some IRS requirements. But as I reviewed it, I was thinking we may want to not have the IRS requirements in there because if they change, we don't want our contract to be inconsistent with them. So we may make a minor edit there. But other than that, I would ask for council's approval for me to enter into an employment contract with Donnell Tanksley.
Anyone like to make that motion?
So moved.
Second.
Then moved by Councilor Stewart and seconded by Councilor Lawrenson to authorize the city manager to enter into an employment contract with Donnell Tanksley. Any questions? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you, Council. Mr. Tanksley will be here on June 24th, which will be our next council meeting. Will be his first day at work, so we'll do a swearing in that evening with you, Madam Mayor. And I also wanted to mention that we, just to, in regards to Ms. Green's comments, that we have another officer starting on July 1st, and then we'll be at full staffing. Council did authorize one additional officer this year, and that's the officer that will be coming in on July 1st.
All right, very good. Okay, next is commission, committee, and board reports.
I vote this.
Oh, sorry.
We have another resolution.
I just looked right over that. Sorry about that. Resolution 1760-19. Declaring an emergency in the city's wastewater system, waiving competitive bidding requirements, and authorizing staff to immediately pursue repairs to lift station 10.
Sam,
would you like to give us a little background on this?
Absolutely.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, council members in the audience. And so we did have some infrastructure failures last week that led us to declare an emergency or actually put it before you. And so we've got a control cabinet that is antiquated. It's really not intended for this specific purpose. There's a little history I'd like to share with you in that originally this pump station was really a private pump station. This was probably 1996, is that correct, Michael?
I'm not sure the date.
Okay, 1996 or 1997. This pump station was introduced as a private pump station over at Semiamo. And over the years, in essence, that additional development, from my understanding, phase two of that development never took place. And so by default, the city of Blaine inherited this this pump station. And so it was in failure mode last week, and so we responded in emergency. We relieved that issue and found that the infrastructure, the components, the pumps themselves, the infrastructure within the wet well and the control cabinet really needs some updating in order for us to meet the requirements that we're under.
Okay. And we don't know how much this will cost yet.
Not at this point, but I would like to speak to that. We've got a couple members in the audience. These are our crew chiefs. And truly, with their support last week, we really took a very aggressive effort to do what we could to limit the cost of the repairs that were necessary. And I just want to applaud them and the efforts of the team. And I think they did a great job.
Thanks, guys. Okay, any questions for Sam?
One last thing that I'd like to say is I know that the amount that we're requesting is in excess. I realize that, and it's really a true number. But I believe with the expertise that we possess and with some of the support that I currently have, that we can reduce the cost. And I say that simply because, again, the valiant efforts that were taken by the maintenance staff last week.
All right. Okay, so can I have a motion to adopt the attached resolution 1760-19 declaring an emergency in the wastewater collection system, thereby waiving competitive bidding requirements and authorizing staff to pursue immediate repair of lift station in accordance with RCW 39.04.280.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Councilor Lawrenson, seconded by Councilor Hawkins, to adopt this resolution. Any further questions? Okay, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Now we have commission, committee, and board reports. Blaine Tourism Advisory and Chamber of Commerce.
BTAC has a meeting tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. The Chamber of Commerce is busy gearing up for their 4th of July celebration, which they assure me will be bigger than last year. Also working on updating their website.
Okay. Boys and Girls Club and Port of Bellingham.
No report.
Okay. Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee. Charlie?
No report.
And Port of Bellingham Marine Advisory Committee?
No meeting.
Okay. Library Committee, Mary Lou?
There's nothing on the library, but the Senior Center, they had board elections, and three new board members were elected, Herman and Kunz, Robert Martin, and Richard Reed. They're also working on a new website and updating their logo. And then there's an all-county Senior Center Friendship Day, and they've been coordinating this with Bellingham, Everson, Ferndale, Linden, Point Roberts, Sumas. I couldn't find out from Kathy exactly when it's going to be here. But anyway, that's coming. 4th of July Pancake Breakfast, they're still gearing up for that. Last year they had 486 people there. And the Harvest Fair is now going to replace the Christmas Bazaar, and the Harvest Fair will be on September 6th and 7th.
All right. And WTA Board?
No report.
No report, okay. Staff department reports. Do we have project updates from Public Works? Okay.
Thanks again. Raven's been leading the charge over at the well field, and so she wanted me to report that there's some progress that we're making, particularly on 1R's newly completed. Well 3R, we hope to have that completed by the end of this week. Well 4, we do have a new pump install. And once 1R and 3R are complete, once they are installed, we're going to perform pump tests to determine how much increase in production we have, and so we're hoping to gain about 20 to 30% of improvement. The Gateway Storm project has been out to bid. It went out to bid last week. East Plain Infrastructure, we have a developer that has backed out. That would be Blossom Grandis Pond from participating. The grant is to be matched with city funds, and she also indicates that we were prepared for this in our budget. So that's good news. There is a bid add or alternate for a section between Harvey and the reservoir, the water reservoir tank. We are also currently soliciting bids for work that needs to be done over at the library. Some of you may have seen some of the barricades we're going to have out in the street. Those are our barricades, and the main line, there's a section of it that needs to be repaired, including the service across the road. And so we have two quotes, and we're working on the third. Hopefully we'll have that by tomorrow so we can go ahead and initiate that work. Hughes Avenue, we had a contractor working over the weekend so that we can stay on our schedule. That paving concluded over at Bell and Peace Portal intersections. And I also want to report on the detour. The detour in place is going to have to be in place until the end of July. And I just wanted to share that with the council. I know that it's a long time from now, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done. We also responded to a sewer force main break this morning, and that would have been over at Drayton Harbor Road. Again, the staff responded very quickly. That work was not contracted out, and I appreciate, again, the efforts that the public work staff put forth. That incident was reported to the Department of Ecology. We also communicated to them this afternoon that the crews had made the repair and were back to normal, other than we have a little paving project to wrap up. We've been having some experiences here at Banner Bank Building with the HVAC issues, and so I've asked Pat, who's our crew chief for Buildings and Grounds, to meet with me at 7 o'clock in the morning so that we can discuss what has been transpiring and hopefully put a corrective action plan before you folks. In addition, we just finished up the contract for FEMA. We had Michael's signature. He provided that document to us late last week, and so I need to coordinate the pickup of that contract, and that will occur sometime this week. And so we're still on track for nearly $2.2 million of FEMA funding, which is absolutely incredible. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions for Sam? Thank you very much, Sam.
Thank you.
Lots going on. Okay, next, Community Development Services. Stacy.
Thank you again, Madam Mayor and Council. So my first update is actually a staff update for everyone. Last week I did receive notice from Debbie Harger, and she is the city's Community Development and Tourism Coordinator, that she's planning on retiring. So her final day with us is going to be on July 31st of this year. Debbie's been with the city for 20 years. She has supported city and planning efforts in a myriad of ways with her work, her knowledge, her love for the community. I've only had a chance to work with her in a short time since I've been here in February, but we've had a lot of fun, and I'm just gonna miss having her around the office. So stay tuned, we'll plan something special for her for that final retirement day. I also want to let you know that the building official, Tim Woodard, and myself, we have been working with our iWorks vendors. iWorks is the program that the software that we use for permit processing, working on testing to get some of our permits online. That includes re-roofs, mechanical, plumbing, and home occupation permits. iWorks is going to have some examples ready for us fairly soon. We're going to beta test those. If that beta testing is successful, hopefully go live with those permits online by the end of July. So that's an exciting move forward. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll see more permits go online as well if that works out. I'm sure everyone noticed that Bordertown Mexican Grill has gotten to their permanent location next to the Welcome Center. I walked by there at lunch today, and it was great to see everybody out there and to see them busy with business. We also did just recently approve the commercial design review for the remodel of the old grocery store in downtown, so we'll be seeing some work around there. Once those permits be happy to take any questions from the council. Thank you so much.
Anything? Thank you. Okay, we've got some calendar dates to take note of. Is there any, before we break for executive session, Is there any unfinished or new business from council?
I had a couple things. One of the things I wanted to revisit was something that we've talked about before with Public Works, actually, the Cherry and Mitchell intersection. We talked about a crosswalk, and we were kind of looking at that and deciding it wasn't necessarily a good idea to put one in. I'd like to just relook at that, please. And the other thing, I was just going to encourage our police department to take up the county on that lethality assessment training, if at all possible. I think that'd be excellent. Thanks.
Okay, anything else?
I've got a couple things. I was driving around in the town today, and I noticed that we have this beautiful view around Peace Portal, and all the trees are down on the railroad track. They're starting to grow up, you know, so we're losing that view going around the bay. And I got into town, and I looked at the, drove by the Thai restaurant, and that little, our parklet, which are supposed to be our signature thing in the city, the blackberries on the other side of the fence are 4 or 5 feet tall.
I noticed that myself, yeah.
Thinking this,
it spoils the view.
It was supposed to be a commitment to make the downtown more attractive by doing that. Let's see, what was the other one? Oh, about the hunting ban. How do we get going with the county promoting a hunting ban in Drayton Harbor? We talked about this earlier this year. Ban hunting in Drayton Harbor.
The duck hunting specifically, right? Yeah.
Before it's hunting season again.
That's something that we will be moving forward, and we'll be bringing a resolution to council so that you can put some official oomph behind
okay.
the request to the county.
All right, good.
Some teeth into it, yeah. Okay. I think you've got everybody with you on that one, Charlie, I believe.
But the trees in the railroad, I don't know how that's going to work out. It's like you have to have a long arm to reach out about 100 feet out to go to the top of those trees that are growing tall along the railroad tracks now between the bank, along the bank.
Okay.
All the way around from like Mitchell to Five to whatever.
Okay.
But so I don't know if you can do anything about it. So.
Okay, so we're going to break for an executive session to discuss performance of a public employee pursuant to RCW 42.30.110.1G. And how long do we anticipate this may be?
10 minutes.
10 minutes?
No action.
And no action taken when we come back, at which time we'll adjourn the meeting.
The other executive session you may want to mention.
Yes, it does say that there's. We will be discussing sale of real property. We're not going to be discussing that this evening. So it's just performance of a public employee this evening. So we will break for about 10 minutes. Okay, we've got our recording going again, Andy?
Yes.
Okay. So we are back from executive session. We were gone approximately 15 minutes, and no action is being taken. And unless there's anything further from council, meeting is adjourned.